You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Now we're going to turn to Puerto Rico. It's been more than 2 weeks since Hurricane Maria hit. The island is still nearly blacked out. Very few people have electricity. And there's a chance that solar power could help, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But first, we're going to hear from the BBC's Alim Makboul in San Juan. We caught up with him just outside the main FEMA center there. And I asked about how people are dealing with just everyday stuff right now.
During the day, you can drive around and see the evidence that hurricane tore across Puerto Rico because of damaged buildings. There's still debris everywhere you look. In the evening, you go around, and it's so strange in a place like San Juan to look at the skyline and see it pitch black. It is still well over 90% of this country that does not have power, and that is having a massive impact. So you don't have water pumped to your house. You're not able to get cash out of the machines. So the way people are getting through it is for the most part, joining together. Churches are helping out. Neighbors are helping out neighbors, taking in people who need accommodation. But it's really tough. Mm.
You mentioned cash, and obviously without power, ATMs aren't working. How does that play out? I mean, are people bartering for things? How does the economy function, if at all?
It's really not functioning. I mean, obviously, very little is open in the way of offices, restaurants, all these kind of establishments aren't able to open. I mean, it is a lot of IOUs. I mean, we've even had journalist teams who've stayed at hotels, often without power and water, who have said, look, we'll have to pay you sometime in the future. The credit card machines are not working, and everybody sort of understands it. There's, people understand that the situation is having an impact, and so, they have to allow for different ways of doing things during this time. The problem is they don't know when this is all going to end.
We're going to talk in a little bit about solar power and how that is figured into some parts of the recovery effort. But for people who do have generators, they need diesel for those to run on. What kind of market is there for diesel right now? What are people paying for that if they can get it?
So the prices have certainly been hiked up. There's no question about that. However, in the time that we've been here, it does appear that the availability of diesel has got better. Hmm. So that is the one positive we can say about the last few days. When we first got here, I mean, the lines at gas stations were just extraordinary, and people were not even being allowed in some places to come with their cars. They could just come and get a jerry can full of fuel, and that was it.
You have been outside of San Juan. What does the infrastructure look like outside of big metropolitan areas, and how are people coping?
Yes, we traveled right across the island. We went from San Juan on the north coast down to Ponce on the south coast. People are helping themselves. All of the help is really concentrated in San Juan, and it is the biggest urban center. That's fair enough. But a lot of the people we spoke to outside of San Juan have said they haven't seen any help come their way. And that's local government help as well as U.S. emergency workers or U.S. Military personnel.
There's been a lot of back and forth about Puerto Rico's debt situation. The island has some $70 billion in debt. For ordinary people in Puerto Rico, how did the financial situation affect their everyday lives even before the hurricane hit?
We've suggested, could this be an opportunity to rebuild, to build infrastructure in a way that could help move things forward, be in the end beneficial for Puerto Rico and its economy? It's very, very tough for people to see things in those kind of terms because they just don't see where that kind of investment is going to come from. We're talking about figures of around $30 billion for Puerto Rico to recover even to where it was. Right now, this is about the pressing issues of getting through each day without power, without water, without mobile phone communications. It's really hard for people to see past that.
That's the BBC's Alim Maqbool in San Juan. Thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
You heard Alim Maqbool talk about the lack of electricity. And at the top of the show, we played you a clip from someone working to get more solar power to the island, not just as a disaster response, but a way to have a potentially more robust system made of several mini electric grids instead of one big one. Generate Capital is just one company founding some of this work, and Jigar Shah is their president and co-founder. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Can you run me through kind of what the pre-hurricane solar landscape was in Puerto Rico, what you guys have, and kind of just what else is out there?
Well, over the past 10 years, the solar industry has installed a lot of solar in Puerto Rico. So thousands of homes, hundreds of businesses, and so about 88 megawatts of rooftop solar and about 125 megawatts of ground-mounted utility-scale solar. So the solar industry's got, you know, 80 companies or so that are active in Puerto Rico, and we own a lot of commercial rooftop projects.
And what sort of state are they in right now?
Depends. One of them was pretty much completely destroyed. I think 85% of the panels were strewn about. One of them is basically functioning. So that one's great. And all of them are getting sort of the repair work that they need to start providing power for those businesses.
One of the reasons we're talking to you is that you wrote this really interesting essay about how solar power can work in disaster response. You know, if you look at Puerto Rico right now, obviously the main energy grid is really not working. How could solar power step in here? You advocated something called microgrids. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that when the grid goes down, the entire grid really has to be up and running together, right? You can't have a piece of it up and the other piece of it down, because the challenge with that is that, you know, electricity flows wherever it wants to go. So when you look at something like a microgrid, you really have the ability to isolate certain loads, like a hospital or a government building or a resort where relief workers have to stay. And you really can make sure that they are up and running and their neighbors are up and running. And that's where the power of the microgrid really comes from.
I mean, I'm almost envisioning like sort of little, I know this is weird, but little jungle gyms of electricity around specific places.
Yeah, I think that the interesting thing is that this is a solution set that's been around for 25 years. So we're not talking about something new. And in fact, many European utilities as well as Japanese utilities are using microgrids to make their grids for the mainland more reliable. So just to give you a stat, in Japan, their main utility has only 4 minutes of outages per year, where the average U.S. utility in the continental United States has 179 minutes of outages. And so microgrids are used to provide reliability, and you know, in Puerto Rico, they can do the same.
Well, what would it take and what would it cost to do that in Puerto Rico?
Well, you know, the estimates are all over the map right now on rebuilding the grid. But, you know, some of the estimates are up to $4 billion to rebuild the PREPA grid. That's the Puerto Rican utility company. And the microgrid solution would cost half that. So it would actually be half the price of rebuilding the current grid in its current form, and it would provide power at much lower cost than the 20 to 30 cents per kilowatt hour that they were paying for power.
Presumably, you'd need to put a lot of capital in up front, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, something on the order of probably $2 billion. But that $2 billion is something they're going to spend anyway to rebuild the grid. And, you know, the question really is, would they be willing to leapfrog 1970s technology, which is what they're rebuilding right now, into modern 21st century technology?
Is that a serious conversation that's happening? I mean, after all, you guys are a pretty significant company in this space.
It certainly is. I mean, and I've been having this conversation for over 10 years in various forms through the Rocky Mountain Institute and, you know, the Carbon War Room. Richard Branson has taken a big leadership role by you know, taking his island 100% renewable energy through the work of NRG. And so there's a lot of companies, ABB, Siemens, GE, who have technology in this area, who have not yet been asked to deploy these kinds of solutions at scale.
Is solar power and would a solar-powered microgrid be any hardier than conventional, you know, electrical infrastructure? Or would you have the same kinds of issues, just a slightly different flavor, you know, in the aftermath of another serious storm?
Well, I think it's very clear that 185-mile-an-hour winds would affect any type of power infrastructure. But the beauty of a microgrid is that it can be fixed within days, not months. And so you now have the ability to repair, you know, solar projects, for instance, that have been damaged in Puerto Rico within days. And that's happening right now. You know, one of the companies who owns the most residential system, Sunnova, is going in and adding batteries to a lot of their projects so that those projects can be up and running quickly. And so these are the kinds of things that can be done quickly. I certainly don't think any power infrastructure would be immune to 185-mile-an-hour winds.
When you talk to other people in the private sector, even before the storm, has there been hesitance to get involved because of the debt situation, or is that not a factor?
Well, the debt situation is going to be problematic just because there's another group of people that are stakeholders here that are, you know, asking a bunch of questions. And then you certainly have the financial oversight board that was put in place by the Obama administration that also has to be dealt with. And so there's layers here of complexity. That being said, I think everyone wants to see Puerto Rico get back on their feet. And so I think there's some shared goal setting here. I don't think anyone wants to see, you know, 1 to 2 million people move out of Puerto Rico into Florida or New York.
Jigar Shah is the president and co-founder of Generate Capital. Thank you.
Thanks for all of your interest in Puerto Rico.